John. Good morning. Well, hopefully whenever John Fletcher calls you, all of you will answer your phone and respond. I am thankful for John. He's got a tough job finding who's going to be here what day and what they're willing to do. So I'm thankful for all the work that John does in making Sunday mornings go so well. So if you ever call me, I promise I'll answer right away. Of course, he never calls me for some reason. I don't know. Well, we're continuing our series through Micah 6 today, and we'll be finishing that up next week and moving on after that. But so today we're working again through what God has said through Micah to his people about the things going on in their time and their place, and then seeing how it applies to us here today. But I want to ask you a question this morning. How many of you know the name Leroy Smith? Good, I'm the only one. That's good. Well, back in July, in the state of South Carolina, they voted to remove the Confederate flag from the state capitol. And that one choice sparked various outcries from people around the nation. Some exulted in the decision, while others were angry at the outcome. Protests and counter-protests were scheduled for late July on the steps of the South Carolina state capitol. And for some reason, they chose one of the hottest possible days of the year. And on that day, three very different groups arrived on the steps of the state capitol building. On one side were the white supremacists who were lambasting the decision. And on the other were members of Black Panthers and other societies and organizations who were there to protest the protesters. And in the middle were the local police and state patrolmen. Shouts, insults, and small bouts of violence erupted at various points throughout the day. But one of the most amazing and beautiful things happened in the very intense heat of the day. One of the troopers saw a civilian in distress, and he moved to respond. And this photo was shot, which most of you have now seen floating around the internet and in newspapers, capturing this moment for all the world to see. Leroy Smith is the gentleman on the left. He's the head of the South Carolina Department of Public Safety, who was simply out that day to support his troopers in the job that they were doing. And he noticed that this man, wearing a white supremacist t-shirt, was becoming overheated. And he took him by the arm, led him up to find shade and water. And when asked later about why he did this for somebody who hates him, Officer Smith was just simply amazed at the world's reaction. He was even more amazed that people responded to this photo. And when asked when he thought why this photo had such resonance, he gave a simple answer. Love. I think that's the greatest thing in the world, love, said that burly, soft-spoken trooper. That's why so many people were moved by what happened. Love and mercy. What amazing concepts. In a world that values violence and vengeance, hate was overcome by love on this day. And today's sermon topic seems to stand in pretty sharp contrast to last week's. Last week we discussed the ideas of justice. And as we looked at last week, when most of us think about justice, we think about judgment and punishment. It's about people getting what they deserve. Mike Colson shared a story with me last week when I asked him what he thought justice meant. Mike works in the justice system. He and Rebecca do a lot with working with people who are undergoing trial. And he told me this story. And it spoke to my heart since I liked the Civil War. Of all the stories he could think of, there's one to go with. A soldier deserted from the Southern Army in the Civil War and was caught and court-martialed. He was brought in front of General Robert E. Lee, who saw that the trooper was scared. "Don't worry, son," Lee said. "You will get justice." And the trooper replied, "That's what I'm afraid of, sir." To be fair, that's how most of us think about justice. But as we saw last week, one of the most amazing things, according to God, when he speaks about justice, is that justice is about more than just punishment. On one hand, it is about getting what we deserve, whether that's punishment, or then God adds protection or care. But on the other, it's about righteousness as well. Justice is about living the right way, treating others the right way, and seeking to do what is right in all circumstances, righteousness, equality, love for God. That is true justice. So last week we focused on the phrase, act justly. And it's a direct assault on all of the injustice taking place in Micah's time. The corruption, the oppression, the violence, the abuse. And Micah reminds them through those two simple words that they are to be just towards one another because God values justice. And indeed, the very next section of Micah, Micah 6, 13 and following, talks about how God is going to bring judgment and punishment upon the people for their actions because Micah knows they are not going to change. And so God is going to bring justice to their situation. And to those of us who are looking at the situation that Micah encounters, I think we can all stop and cheer. Imagine Micah's story like a movie, with all the exploitive leaders as the bad guys in the film and all the terrible things they're doing to all of their people, taking advantage of them. The leaders have been oppressing the people. The rich have been exploiting the poor. The merchants have been cheating everyone. And the people are being abused by those in power. But finally, Micah says, the bad guys are going to get what they deserve. Show them no mercy, we might cry. Let them have their just deserts. And as we look at our world around us and we encounter just some of the violence and the oppression and the brokenness, we might cry the same. Just in the past week, past couple of days, we've had an on-air shooting and the tragedy that happened at WDBJ. We had a cop gunned down just north of here in cold blood. And as we watch the news, as we read the papers, we open the internet, we, along with Micah, want to cry out for justice for those who are exploited. When we see injustice in our world, we want to see things made right and the evildoers punished. And so Micah begins with the phrase, act justly. But he quickly adds in another phrase that seems to stand in opposition to justice. But what does the Lord require of you but to act justly and to love mercy? What do justice and mercy have to do with one another? Aren't these two ideas mutually exclusive? When we see evil going on around us, what we don't want is mercy for the perpetrator. We want justice and fairness. We always want justice, except in our own lives. We might like a little mercy there, but everyone else deserves justice, right? But what's amazing about God is that in God and His character and His nature, we find a perfect balance of justice and mercy. For God, they are two sides of the same coin. It's His inherent nature. Listen to how God describes Himself to Moses in Exodus 34. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, and forgiving wickedness and rebellion and sin. Yet He does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generations. What we find here is God describing Himself, and in His own description, He talks about His love and His justice. God cannot leave the guilty unpunished, He says, but He's also compassionate and gracious and slow to anger and forgiving for the evil actions of humanity. But we also have another word that we encounter in this text. It's a word that's repeated twice in God's description of Himself. And that word is chesed. It's a fun word to say. It's kind of guttural. It starts here in the bottom of the throat. Last week I made you practice your Hebrew, so we're going to try it again. Everyone say with me, chesed. Excellent. There's a lot of hawking going on out there, but that's okay. One more time, chesed. You're becoming wonderful at Hebrew, far better than me. It's a word here that's translated as both abounding in steadfast love and maintaining steadfast love to thousands. The word chesed is used 246 times in the Old Testament, almost always in relation to the love of God for His people. Now, for those of you who grew up with the King James Version, it's the word you might recognize as loving kindness, that nice hyphenated term. Depending on what other translations you're reading, you might have the words love, covenant love, grace, and compassion. But chesed at its core is about the covenantal love of God. God promised to love his people through thick and thin, and he maintains that love in times in which his people are pretty unlovable. Hesed refers to the faithfulness of God. My best friend Jonathan has a phrase that's become kind of the catchphrase for his family. In fact, it's their mantra. They have it hanging in their door as you walk into their home. And the phrase is this: when has God not been faithful? When has God not been faithful? And I want you to think with me back through Israel's history with God. God was always faithful to his people, even when they're not faithful to him. He stuck by them through their doubting and their idolatry. He stayed with them when they ignored him, when they knew what was right, but they chose what was wrong, when his people acted unjustly. He was faithful even in the midst of the exile, allowing them to be carted off to a foreign land and yet maintaining his promises and bringing them home. And even in their unfaithfulness, God was faithful to them. He maintained his hesed to them. It's not because they deserved it, but it's because who God is and what he is like. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in hesed, maintaining hesed to thousands and forgiving wickedness and rebellion and sin. And that hesed is then tied to the very nature and justice of God. I love the words of Psalm 33. It's a song of praise for the goodness and faithfulness of God. It talks about God's creation of the world and the way that God sustains the world. It talks about God's love and protection, and it reminds them that God watches over everyone and everything. And in the midst of this psalm, we have verse 5. For the Lord loves righteousness and justice, and the earth is full of his unfailing love. And here we have the two words that we talked about last week, tzedakah and mishpat, the words righteousness and justice. And we're then told that the whole world is full of his chesed. Justice, righteousness, and love of God are found in the very character of God himself. But what does all this have to do with Micah 6? We haven't really talked about Micah 6 yet. But we find as we turn into Micah 6 that God makes this statement. But what does the Lord require of you but to act justly and to love chesed? The word mercy here is the same word that's talked about as the character of God. It's the covenantal love that's reflected in God himself. When people truly encounter the chesed of God, it then goes on to change everything. They realize that God accepts them for not for who they are, but for who God is. That God loves people because he is the very definition of love itself. That God doesn't love because we are worthy. He isn't faithful because we are faithful. There's nothing that we can do to earn the chesed of God. We simply accept it, and then we allow it to transform our hearts and our lives. But then we're told that those who know God cannot just claim it with their words. They must also proclaim it with their lives. And those who have encountered the love and mercy of God begin to want to extend that love and mercy and grace towards others. As Micah says, do mercy or love mercy, depending on which translation we're reading. For God's love makes us more loving. God's mercy shows us what it means to be merciful. And God's faithfulness teaches us to extend that mercy for the long haul. Harold Schenck is one of my mentors. He's now the president of Ohio Valley College. And he wrote a commentary on the book of Micah. And he says this about Hesed. Hesed describes the love the Lord has for his people, the love he expects from his people, and the love that they should then exhibit towards one another. In essence, it's all about loving God and loving others. At its core, our mercy is about God. It flows from a life of connection to God. It then flows out to others, those who are made in God's image. Mercy, then, is just love put into practice towards other people. One of the most formative events of my life was the time I spent in Memphis work camp. Work camp was 1 week out of the summer in Memphis in which we would go and we would paint houses in the inner city for those who owned their own homes but couldn't afford the upkeep. And the goal of that experience was that so others could experience the love of God in their lives. And one of the things that was always mentioned every year was that hundreds of teenagers would come and pay to paint houses for people they don't know. And the news crews would come out, and typically somebody would say, I don't know how they do it. I don't know who's going to pay to do this. And it was always an amazing kind of experience. But the phrase on the back of the t-shirt was the perfect summary of what work camp was all about. The phrase was, serving God by serving people. It's a simple four-word way of reminding us that extending love and mercy to others is extending love and service towards God. That's our sacrifice, our offering, our worship to God Himself. So, church, how can we be a people who love mercy, who reflect the very character and nature and image of God, who take God's kindness and goodness and faithfulness and love and extend it towards other people? Well, first, I think we have to change the way that we look at people. As we discussed last week, it's easy for us to look at others and see them by worldly standards as being sinful or messy or broken. It's far easier to stick labels on people by how they appear to us. We judge by outward appearances. But we often don't see at all. Almost every Sunday, I pass the same young man begging on the street corner. He can't be more than 11 or 12, but he's really, really tall for his age. He always has a different cardboard sign, but the message is pretty much always the same. He needs money for food and to help his parents pay the rent. I never see him at all during the week, but almost every Sunday morning, there he is. And I always wonder, what's his story? How did he get here? Where does he stay? What is he doing during the week? I wonder if his story is even true. And some days I get really angry. Why is he out here, and where are his parents? Some days I get pretty sad. What a tough world that we live in. Some days I feel guilty, so I pull up and I roll down my window and I give him a little bit of change or some of the money out of my wallet, but I don't really take the time to stop and talk to him. But most days I'm pretty apathetic. I simply just pass him by. And this guy always stands out to me, but I wonder how many dozens of others I pass constantly, day in and day out, without seeing them at all. How many people are simply invisible to me? Not just people on the street. Sometimes it's the very people all around me. It could be the people in the pews, the barista at the coffee shop, the coworker next to you. How often do we not see the hurt and pain in their lives, or stop to listen to their stories, or not pay attention to their need? But when we allow God's mercy, God's hesed, God's love to transform our lives, we begin to see people with the eyes of mercy, and we look for ways in which we can serve. Second, if we want to extend God's mercy, it means we look for ways to invest. A little more than a week ago, a group of members from here at West University went to meet with Paul Woodward and a group at Impact. And we went to kind of figure out how we can best serve in our own community and also partner with the things that they are doing. And in the midst of that conversation, Paul made a statement that struck home with me. He mentioned how everyone on their staff had a group of people that they tried to shepherd and look after. They made sure to get to know those people and their needs. And Paul mentioned how truly difficult that commitment was, because people are messy and have lots of problems. But then he made a statement that was profound to me. He mentioned that they covenant together with that other individual. And as long as that other person was willing to continue working together and trying to move forward, then they were committed to being there for that person for the long haul. They were invested as long as it takes. So how do we begin to invest to help people in need? I think there are a number of ways we can do it. Financially, we can find a local ministry like Impact and donate money to help with ministries or scholarships. Currently, Impact is giving 19 college scholarships to help their graduating seniors, who many of them are the first high school graduates in their family, turn around and go to college and become the first college graduates in their family history. or find or give money to help our congregation as we minister to the needs of those in our own community and serve those around us. Find a Christian charity organization that you can partner with financially in blessing those who have needs. Find a way to invest, but also find a way to invest your time. And some of those ways might include volunteering to mentor a student through Impact. Impact has a program that partners adults with children and teenagers to provide mentoring and homework help during the week, just a couple hours out of your week. I'd be happy to talk to you or give you that information if you'd like. Or Kelly Rushing is on the board of the Open Door Mission, a residential facility that helps people coming out of drug and alcohol dependency move into a more productive life. And they're always needing spiritual mentors to help walk alongside of those men. And I'm sure Kelly would be happy to tell you ways to get involved. Or The Point, a local ministry that we support, provides lunch to 200-plus college students every week. And then sit down. Many of those students are international students away from home for the first time. And individuals sit at the table and get to know them and just talk to them and find out about life and encourage them. So volunteer to go and sit or serve. Or even prepare food. Or some of the individuals here have formed a lasting commitment at the Belmont community just down the street. So commit to going to worshiping with those brothers and sisters in Christ and encouraging them as you can. And as I look around our room today, I can tell you story after story of individuals who are here who are investing in the lives of others. They give of their time, their talents, their energy, and their money to help those in need. And I'm not going to call you out because most of you would be embarrassed. But I want you to know that there are many here and there are many more who I don't know who are doing amazing things because of the mercy of God. And you are amazing and wonderful examples of the selfless generosity and the chesed of God himself. So church, let's learn to invest and continue investing. And the third thing we can do as a church is to realize this. You don't have to do everything. Now, let me say that again. If you want to extend mercy, you don't have to do everything. Because as we look at the world around us, there's all kinds of opportunities. And sometimes we see a need, or we hear a sermon like this one, or we watch the news, and we become guilty that we aren't doing enough. And the need is so big, and I'm not feeding the homeless and taking care of the poor and helping oncoming international students and teaching English to immigrants and mentoring and helping refugees and drilling wells in Africa, and we can keep filling out that list, right? You don't have to do everything. When we were in Argentina, somebody sent us a copy of the Christian book Radical by David Platt. And if you haven't read it, it's a good book, regardless of what I'm going to say next. Megan began to read that book, and she read, and she read. And Platt's book argues that Christianity has lost out to the American dream. It's caught up more in self and consumerism than in Christ. And so he's calling for Christians to be more radical in their faith. So here was Megan, who had moved to Argentina, who had given up kind of what she knew, working in a different culture and place and language, who is working with a local church and serving as a missionary. And the more she read, the more she became upset because she felt she wasn't doing enough. There were so many needs and so many things that had to be done and not enough time to do it. And she felt she could do nothing more to be more radical, and she was letting God down. And as I walked in one day, she was crying while reading this book, and I became angry at it, that it made her feel this way. Now, let me reiterate, it's a fine book, okay? But I want to remind you that we can't do everything. Even Jesus didn't heal every disease or feed every hungry person or go to every single village. Instead, he invested himself in specific situations and in very particular individuals. And we can do the same. Practicing mercy doesn't mean you have to do everything. It simply means you have to do something. It means we find ways in which we can give and serve, that we look for opportunities in which we can give our time and talents to God's glory, that we're attentive to God's work through people and organizations and situations around us, and then we find ways we can partner with them in that. And I want you to know that doing something doesn't necessarily mean you have to go and do something. Now, if you're able, by all means. But I know that many of us are in life situations with our health or our work or our family obligations that we're barely able to keep up with what we have. So I want to challenge you then to do something and invest yourself in prayer. Pray for those who are serving. Encourage them. Lift them up. Send them cards and phone calls. Tell them how much you appreciate the things that they're doing. Because the fact is, all of us can be hesed people. We can share God's loving kindness through our words and our actions. See, invest, and do. In essence, love mercy. When we do these things, we're becoming more like God. We're participating in God's very life and character. For God is a God of loving kindness, of mercy, of grace, of covenantal love. I'm not a big fan of WWE wrestling. That's a fun way to start, isn't it? I'm not a big fan of wrestling, but I'm becoming a big fan of a guy by the name of Titus O'Neil. A few weeks ago, Titus was walking down the street and he decided to invite a homeless couple to lunch. And he stops and he gets them and he brings them to a place in San Diego and he sits down with them and he says from that very moment, everybody kind of treated him hands off. Because these people looked a little weird and smelled a little weird and no one wanted to help them or serve them. But they did. But Titus O'Neil decided, you know what? We need to change the way people think. So that afternoon, he went out and he gathered a much larger group off the streets, anybody he could find, and he invited them to dinner at the same restaurant. And as he walked in, he said the attitude was completely different. And so here's his response on Instagram. Completely different response than last night at the Yard House, I wasn't supposed to say the restaurant, sorry, in San Diego. I'm not a fan of injustice or prejudice of any sort towards anybody. My mother raised me with the help of many others from all walks of life. And there were many times that I had to go without as a youth because of a lack of financial resources. People will categorize those they can't relate to and criticize those that stand up and speak out against what is wrong, all until it directly affects them. I'm not the richest man in the world, but money, fame, and status have never held me in bondage because at the end of the day, I've gone without before and God has always provided for me. And now I have the opportunity to do the exact same thing that others did for me when I had nothing to give them in return. Love others. So thanks to those who accepted help and those that treated my guest at lunch as humans, patrons, and God's people. So here's a screenshot of the dinner of Titus O'Neil surrounded by his new friends and all those who gave them a wonderful reception at the restaurant. What a beautiful reminder of what it means to live with mercy and to extend the mercy of God. West University, may we be people who see, invest, and do. May we know the mercy of God and share that mercy with the world. We serve an amazing and merciful God. A God who says that we deserve justice. A God who cannot tolerate sinfulness. And a God who then steps into the gap and says, but I will take that punishment on myself so that you can know my mercy. And through Jesus, God extends both his justice and his mercy to all of us and says, all of us, anyone, can become my child. That's what's beautiful about the mercy of God. And that's the mercy that we want to share with those around us. And so that's what this time is for, that if we can help you to encounter God's mercy right now, if we can pray for you, if we can encourage you, if we can lift you up, if we can say great work to the amazing things you're doing as you pray for people that need God's mercy in their own lives. Any way that we can help you as you respond to the invitation, that's what we're here for. If there's any way we can bless you in God's name, we'd love to do that. We want to take this moment to extend God's mercy to those around us. So if there's any way we can help you today, come to the front as we stand and as we sing.